Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today, doing our part three, our final episode in the series on launching E-Commerce Fuel Capital. So first two episodes focused on setting up the fund, why do it, how do you set it up. Episode two was shopping for deals and what that looks like in the real world. And this episode is on closing the final deal, or closing a deal, you know, for the first deal, actually, for the fund. And so did this with a couple of partners. Really excited to have Michael Jackness as a part of this deal, Bill D'Alessandro as a part of this deal, as owners, operators, and then, of course, the ECF Capital Group as investors. And two people I've known for a long time, good friends, people that I respect a lot, have a lot of expertise in the space. And so in today's episode, I'm going to talk about how the deal that we finally ended up closing on came to be, how it came across our desk, why we liked it, how we structured a deal between those three parties, ECF Capital and Bill and Mike, what the different roles were, some of the big roadblocks and problems we encountered, the very painful Christmas Eve call that we received. We get into a lot of it. So it's a fun episode, cover a lot of ground, and hope you enjoy seeing inside the process and how this whole, the whole story and the whole deal unfolded. So like I mentioned at the top, joined by two good friends and now business partners, Mr. Michael Jackness from ecomcrew.com and Bill D'Alessandro from elementsbrands.com. Looking forward to diving into the deal and talking through it. And before we get into the nitty gritty, wanted to give a just a little disclaimer. One thing we're not going to do, and it feels a little strange, Mike, I know you are really transparent with what you do. Bill, you are as well. And I traditionally have shared everything. We decided not to share the name of the company that we invested in, partially in a large part because we have a lot of investors here and just out of sensitivity to them, partially because, you know, we want to be kind of sensitive to the seller as well, but you know, kind of love to be transparent and usually are, but need to be a little bit more, just a little bit more sensitive with the name and the details of this company. So that being said, I kind of want to walk people through where we kind of how the deal came about, you know, how we structured it, some of the closing challenges, and then kind of get an update on how things have been going since we closed. And Mike, what, you know, originally the seller, who is someone that we both know, have a long relationship with, reached out to you and I to talk about selling, and it kind of morphed into potentially, hey, we should take a look at this. So what was it that you liked about the deal, Mike? And then maybe Bill, you can share as well, kind of from the outset.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just knowing the person. So I knew that I was getting full transparency. I mean, whenever you buy a business off of any website or platform, you always have to worry about what is the seller hiding. And so knowing that I was talking to the seller before they were even contemplating selling to us, like I felt like we had a kind of an inside track. The margins are really good in this business. There's some secret sauce defensibility that I think that, you know, is really appealing. And so that's kind of how the whole thing started. And once they decided they did want to sell, I did bring up, well, maybe that's something we'd be interested in. And so that's kind of how the whole thing came together.
Yeah. You know, that's similar to the thing that I like too, which is it kind of does all come back to the seller. I knew this person pretty well for a few years also. And the thing that I knew about this person was that they had great systems. They were really a, you know, kind of a fastidious entrepreneur, had everything documented. And this was bared out when we got the tax returns and they tied to the penny or almost exactly to the penny to the company's financial records. So I knew that this person was running a tight ship because I knew who they were, and that was bared out during diligence. So for me, that was an important thing as well.
I'm thinking back to the original conversation now that I had with them. And the other thing that was kind of going through my mind, because you just mentioned, Bill, like they run a tight ship. And so you're always looking for things that you can improve upon. It's like when a business is like really running well, it's like not really the type of thing that I think that we look for typically, right? We're looking for something where we can fix something that's broken in some ways. But there was a few things that they just didn't feel comfortable with or didn't really want to mess around with. And one of them was sourcing from Asia, basically, from China. And so they're buying things from suppliers in the US that are buying the things from China. So I thought, oh, well, there's a opportunity there. I saw some opportunity in some SEO stuff where they just wasn't their biggest focus. They were focused mostly on on the Amazon stuff. And so as I was kind of thinking through things, it's like, okay, well, the parts that I don't necessarily want to deal with, you know, the operational stuff where I'm not necessarily going to make any improvements, you know, to it, we can take that stuff over and let it continue to run smoothly. But the things that I think that we can add our secret sauce or our knowledge to are wide open spaces. And so that was the only thing that appealed to me.
Yeah, that was kind of the perfect combo in this business, right? There was really tight systems for the things the business was doing. But this seller kind of said, look, you know, this business is optimized to be a lifestyle business. I really like my lifestyle. I have a great one. And this seller gave us a list and they said, on day one, you should do this, this, and this. And we said, well, why didn't you do those things? And seller says, be too much work. You know, I make enough money. You know, I'm happy. Like, it's great. And this kind of sounds ridiculous, but I see this on some Elements Brands deals as well is, you know, people are making six figures a year and they're happy, right? So this was sort of the perfect combination. Usually the people who are on cruise control are not very well organized. And so the downside of lots of stuff to improve is that you've also got to shore up the basic operations. But this was a great combination that the seller was super buttoned up kind of on the things that were in their wheelhouse and had just consciously not pursued a bunch of things that we were really excited to pursue.
Yeah, I remember having one conversation with the seller during diligence and diving into advertising. And some of the advertising was you know, returning a pretty good level and there was a lot more room. And I said, well, why didn't you just bump up the spend here? It was working well. And I just think she hadn't, you know, wasn't something that she had the bandwidth or the inclination to do. And so it's tons of opportunities for kind of growing the business. The other things I liked about it too is there was a checklist I had on the ECF Capital front for businesses to look at. Good margins, which is important. This one has that. Repeat business is a big one. And it had, I think, you know, really strong repeat business, 30% plus of people were reordering. A boring or unsexy niche. And it's, that is, I think, interesting. You know, I like that. I like, you know, niches that are not, you know, super glamorous. I think there's more money in there often. The only thing that scared me was the Amazon concentration. And it had, you know, most of the sales come from Amazon. But the thing that gave me comfort there was, Bill, like you said, that history with the seller, knowing how risk adverse they are and how cleanly and from a white hat perspective, they built the business gave me a ton of, at least a lot more comfort on that front.
Yeah. I mean, you can be comfortable with it all you want, but like Amazon's, you're still in Amazon's pie. And so, or boat or whatever. And this is the thing that concerns me, like even going into this, but you know, I think that's something that we all accept as Amazon sellers. You know, hopefully, you know, this isn't the thing that they target to do an Amazon basics thing or disrupt it in some other way. It's always a little bit scary, but it also goes to another thing that I'm excited about, which is, you know, they were not necessarily focused on their own website as much as I think we're going to try to be. We'll see how this plays out. A lot of times, you know, as a buyer of a business, you have like all these dreams and they don't always play out the way that you think they will. But I'm pretty confident that with some SEO efforts and just kind of digging into things after talking to the seller now for the last couple of weeks, there's some pretty big opportunities to at least lessen the Amazon risk factor. It will never be, you know, 50-50 or anything like that in terms of website sales to Amazon, but at least we can get more sales through our own website, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. Bill, maybe I'd love to hear kind of maybe a little segue here into how we structured this deal, because I feel like all three of us brought very different things to this deal. We had different risk profiles, different things we wanted to share. So, and you were kind of the person after Mike and I looked at this and for, you know, a couple of reasons we don't have to get into, ultimately decided maybe it wasn't going to work out with just the two of us. You kind of jumped in and were able to help get the deal done with your involvement. So do you want to talk about kind of from your perspective, how you heard about this and maybe kick us off on how we structured this and the different roles that we all played?
Yeah, definitely. So what was really interesting is we kind of all brought something unique to the table, which was, you know, Andrew and E-commerce Fuel Capital, you know, really liked the business and wanted to make an investment, but wanted to stay in a minority kind of not control position. And then, you know, I was kind of looking to do some investing on the side, you know, through ECF Capital primarily. But, you know, when this kind of came up, you know, I said, you know, I'm all in on Elements Brands and I do that all day. So I don't have time to necessarily run this new business. So I said, we need an absolutely killer e-com operator to run this thing. And of course, standing right there was our good friend, Mike Jackness, who I think is one of the best e-com CEOs that I've ever met. So it was kind of perfect in that Andrew was bringing the capital. Mike had just sold his business last year and was kind of looking for something else to get involved with. And I didn't have time day to day, but I was able, I had just refinanced our debt at Elements Brands. So my personal guarantee had been freed up. So I was able to personally guarantee our SBA loan, which Mike and Andrew weren't able to do. So we kind of each brought something different to the pie and it all came together quite nicely.
Yeah. And I think it's, when it was, we probably had, I don't know, maybe two or three different calls where we thought about how the structure works. How do you, the one thing for me, and it'd be probably make sense to do another episode on this, is just the, I have always run kind of just a single person boat, you know, in terms of single person ownership on the LLC. And once you start thinking about bringing, you know, working with other people and how that looks and how the, just how that works and from a rule standpoint and a structure standpoint, it just definitely powerful because there's no way we could have done this deal on our own, but it's, it also adds a layer of complexity. But I thought it was cool how we thought through that because like for Mike, for example, with his, the way that his kind of, you know, compensation works is it's tied to investors. So like the better investors do on an IRR basis, and that's an internal rate of return. It's more or less the interest rate you get for investing in something. The better investors do, then, you know, the better the Mike does. And it's, you know, set up in a way where it's very attractive to him to you know, motivate him and to incentivize him to do that. For me, like, you know, Bill, you know, I'm pretty risk adverse. You have much more comfort on the PG side for the debt. We had the good, so it's just, I just thought it was cool how everything came together on the puzzle side to, for this all to work out well.
Yeah. And I, Mike, I feel a little bit weird talking about you right in front of you here. But
you're one of the things talking behind my back. This is so awkward.
you know, when I was thinking about how to structure this, you know, I said, we need a killer CEO. And this is an important part, important point I think people need to hear. You know, I knew that like, you don't get Mike Jackness for a salary, right? Like I knew Mike, the type of guy, like you're an entrepreneur, right? And so I said to Andrew, I said, if we're going to partner with Mike on this, his comp needs to be structured in a way that the better the business does, like he has the potential to make an outsized, phenomenal outcome. So we came to Mike with, you know, kind of a very aggressive equity-based bonus system, where if the investors do well, you know, Mike, you know, shares aggressively in the upside. Mike, I think that's what, you know, got you excited, because I don't think I could have bought a year of your life for just a fixed dollar amount.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely right. I mean, and it just, the timing was perfect. As you mentioned, we sold a business in 2019 and we had been looking for quite a while for something else to do. And I'm not sure if you guys even know all the, this background, but there's actually a couple of other deals that we had gotten into the LOI stage and they had fallen through. And so, you know, a couple of things like almost happened throughout 2020, but just it never materialized. And so I was starting to get a little bit antsy. Our team was at a point where, you know, everything was running smoothly with the other businesses I have, and we were really ready and looking for something to do. And so this came up at the perfect time. But again, I mean, as you said, I'm not interested in just working for a salary. I mean, it's, you know, I wanted to go buy something on my own and go do my own thing. But I thought, you know, the only thing that I look back at my life, you know, sometimes you take a little bit less for an experience gain. And I thought that the experience gain part here, just as much as the compensation, could be really valuable for me. You know, looking at, I've never done a deal quite like this. I mean, I've done deals with other partners and other investors and other things like this back in the poker days, but it wasn't quite like this. And, you know, so having exposure to, you know, someone like yourself, Bill, who's done lots of these deals, I mean, now just being a fly on the wall and seeing how some of this is done will probably be valuable experience in the future. And if the deal goes well, there's, you know, a dozen people that invested through ACF Capital that hopefully have a positive, you know, experience as well working with me. And you just never know what door opens next. And so I just felt like all the pieces were kind of coming together. Plus I, you know, like the seller of the business, I like the business itself. So it was just kind of the right set of circumstances at the right time.
I mean, I think the big lesson for me is it just kind of all comes together sometimes. And, you know, Andrew and I could have gone to Mike with a less aggressive compensation package. The three of us also could have gone to the seller and tried to nickel and dime on purchase price. But instead, you know, Andrew and I came to Mike with a generous package. And then the three of us went to the seller and said, you know, here's a full multiple, you know, don't hire a broker, you know, let's not negotiate. We want to give you a price that you can say yes to. And the seller did accept our price on the first go. And I think just all of that, it all just felt right during this deal because I didn't feel like anybody was trying to kind of clutch their pockets too tightly. You know, people were just trying to make sure that, you know, everybody could make money. And kind of that old adage, you know, don't focus on what the other guy puts in his pocket, focus only on what you put in your pocket. You know, if that's a good thing, go forward. Don't worry about, you know, how well other people are doing because everybody should do well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it helps having the existing rapport. It helps so much. Like Bill, I know that, you know, you and I, you know, at one or two times had some conversations that were, you know, where you had to give up some things like down the stretch, kind of the structure that I had for Envision and kind of had spent a lot of time setting up. We weren't able to use that just based on some legal issues to get the deal done on time. And like, but the fact that you have that rapport and like both, you know, all the parties have that trust and that sense of goodwill. So you can have that give and take and you're not trying to nickel and dime, like it makes it so much, and not to say that sometimes you don't have conversations that, you know, are harder, but it makes it so much easier to have them in good faith and get stuff done. So closing, kind of going down the stretch, Bill, tell us about the phone call you got on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. So we put this deal under LOI in October. We were using a SBA loan to partially fund the deal. And we told them in October, we have to close in 2020 because obviously seller wants 2020 taxes, just with the tax uncertainty of the incoming administration. They wanted to make sure they understood the tax treatment they were getting and that we could close by the end of the year. It's October. No problem. Right. So we're ahead of the ball game. I mean, we've got all our docs locked, like everything is fine. It is Christmas Eve and I am at my in-laws and my phone rings at 9 a.m. Christmas Eve. And they tell us that the bank has deemed that our structure is ineligible for an SBA loan because it looks, in their words, quote, this is a private equity deal. And the thing that kind of summed it up for me is Andrew texted me back and he goes, starting my day from my Lux private equity office. And it's a picture of him in his van with like a tin cup of coffee, like, you know, getting started in his Lux private equity office.
Did you see the stray dog that was begging for scraps outside the door? I don't know if I made it into the picture or not.
It was hilarious. And so essentially, it was the 24th of December, and we had to close by 12/31, or the seller, rightfully, by the way, I should add, was going to raise the price on us because, you know, that was going to create some tax uncertainty for them. And also, the business had grown and improved since we put it under LOI, and the seller felt like it was probably worth more money, and that if they were going to be asked to take some tax uncertainty, that they should get compensated for the fact that business was bigger, and that risk being that it was us that missed the closing deadline, even though it was the bank's fault, it's still us. You know, it all comes back to us. It was our financing source. So they were right. So we had essentially 7 days to re-engineer our entire deal in a way that was SBA compliant in order to close by the end of the year, or it was going to cost us a ton of money. So I called Mike and Andrew on Christmas Eve and said, boys, we gotta get to work. So we spent really the whole week between Christmas and New Year's restructuring the entire deal. And what we ended up doing was we had structured that most investors were going to invest through a holding entity. So there were fewer shareholders in the business that we were buying. But what we ended up having to do is have everybody invest directly and eliminate the holding entity. And for whatever reason, our bank felt as though that was appropriate, even though it was the same people in the same dollar amounts, et cetera. So it was a little bit nonsensical. But if you ever do one of these deals, sometimes you just need to say to them, tell me what I need to do and I will do it. And we did not ask questions. I did not try to point out to them that it made no sense. We just kind of did it. And we did close on the 31st. And huge props to all of the ECF Capital investors who kind of hung with us, Andrew and, you know, everybody who invested, because they made us jump through tons of hoops on verification of funds. I never want to hear the word seasoned funds again.
Right. like about buying a house or investing in a business, like, because it was pretty similar scrutiny.
Yes. Basically, they want to see the funds at rest in a bank account for 3 months. And when you have 10 plus entrepreneurs investing in a deal, the financial situations are complex and there's a lot of money moving around. So there was a lot of layers to peel back. So thank you to everybody who helped the bank understand where the money was coming from.
Yeah, I think the biggest, and it's not even like buying a house. Buying a house, a lot of times they just want to, you know, see the funds. And I feel like this was, they had to trace back where the money came from for 2 to 3 months. And then even if there was money that wasn't related to that, but it was a deposit over $10,000, they had to trace that back. So, I mean, when I got my funds, I think I sent them bank statements from 6 different bank accounts over the course of 3 months. And even with people submitting 3-4 times, you know, they would submit something and they'd come back and have to submit again, we still only verified probably 2/3 of our investors because they wouldn't close the loan with any funds that were from people who they didn't know exactly where every cent came from. So it was a huge learning process from probably not as bad if it's just you, but trying to do an SBA loan with multiple investors. And in the future, if we ever are, you know, decide to do this again, having a very clear discussion up front with, hey, take the money you're going to invest, put it in the bank account now, don't touch it for 3 months and we'll be fine. But otherwise, it can cause a ton of headaches.
There was a moment where I'm talking to the woman who was overseeing this from like a hotel room and from a super Motel 8 in Van Horn, Texas. I have her on the phone because I'm like, I need to talk to you about this because through email, this is taking too long. And so I use this service that moves money around every month I have like a dozen bank accounts that it links to. And whatever one has the highest interest rate that month, it moves the money into that one automatically. It's a very cool service, awful for something like this. And so I get her on the phone and like, you know, I'm like, okay, well, it was in this bank this month and it went to this bank. And eventually I was just like, this is never going to end. You realize that, right? Like every month or two, whatever one is the highest, like it changes. So like this will never end. We'll be here until like we get back to Adam and Eve. Like it's just never going to end. And finally she just kind of capitulates. She's like, okay, well, we're going to go back basically the beginning of the year. And if I can trace it all the way back to then we'll be okay. And so like I had to go with her through every one of those like steps, like get the bank account statements, the beginning statement from when it went into the bank to when it came out of the bank, all the way back through the beginning of the year. I mean, I was just like, you got to be kidding me at this point. This was just almost comical. And it didn't matter. That was the thing that was crazy. Like it didn't matter. I was like, I'll show you another account that has this money that was sitting there all this time, if need be, like one of my other business accounts or something. She's like, no, it has to be the account that you sent it from with the account number, the last 4 digits, had to go all the way back from like, I had to go from that wire from this account all the way back. And I was just like, oh my God, this is insane. It's absolutely insane. But that's what they wanted to see.
We miraculously got it done though by the last day.
There's one more funny story I want to just mention as well, which was, I was at El Paso at this point. This was on Christmas Eve. We had decided, we haven't gotten to this point yet, but we decided that we were going to drive across the country. That we live in Las Vegas right now. The business is located on the East Coast. And normally I would just be on an airplane, like no big deal. I'll be out there for closing. But with COVID, I was like, we're going to do this through Zoom. And as we kind of started getting closer, I was starting to get really uneasy. We decided we're going to pile the whole family in a car, drive cross country. I'm in El Paso when I get the call from Bill and I'm like, do I keep on driving or do I turn around? And Bill's just like, no, keep going, man. It'll all be good. It's all going to work out. And I'm like, I'm like an Arkansas Bill, are we good yet? I get the Georgia Bill. Like,
yeah, and I go, keep driving. We'll have it solved by the time you get there.
Like, I've been in Florida now. Come on, man. Like, let's, are we good or not?
When did you actually have a comfort, Mike? Because I feel like I was trying, I mean, we kept getting closer. We had these encouraging things, but even still, it's the kind of thing where I didn't want to get my hopes up at all until it was a done deal, right? Because I felt like there was like 3 or 4 hurdles that we had to cross to get there. And even if you cross 2, you still got 3 left.
That the business is located in by the time we knew that everything was going to be okay? I mean, it was that last second.
Bill, you mentioned something that I think is a really good lesson for this, and you have done definitely more deals than either Mike or I have, especially of this type. And you said that one thing you've learned is that no one ever does their homework until like the 11th hour. Like people say, oh, we're great, we're good to do. I've experienced this on buying houses, on other things, but not to the same degree you have. And like, I think it's a good reminder that if you're doing something like this, plan on, you know, just kind of bake this into your, there's obviously, you know, that everything takes twice as long as you think, but there should also be the deals tend to, you know, get very complex when if there's any contingent parties, they start doing their homework at the 11th hour. So that was, for me, I thought that was a really good lesson in that planning the buffer, especially for year-end stuff, and just that, you know, this stuff tends to pop up when you're doing any major deal because people kind of put off doing their homework until the last minute.
Yep. I mean, the thing was, we had provided the bank with these legal documents, you know, at least 4 to 6 weeks earlier. But what we found out is that no one had bothered to read them until Christmas Eve, which is infuriating. So, you know, and I found this just so many times, like people, you know, it's so easy to get on a conference call and go, yeah, we're fine. Like we're tracking well, but like it comes down to the deadline and people actually start doing their homework and stuff comes up. And by the way, it's almost always attorneys that do this for whatever reason, and banks and lenders, it's debt providers and it's attorneys. The equity guys, you know, the business people are usually already ahead of it, but sorry to all the attorneys out there. And we work with some great attorneys. It was not our attorneys that did it. It was the bank's attorneys that did it. So if you are closing a deal, just assume, you know, the last week before is going to be a disaster. Like I woke up on, you know, the Monday before Christmas, you know, we were kind of scheduled to close. And I said, well, this deal is supposed to close this week. I said to my wife, and I said, I don't know who's going to try to blow it up, but someone is. And I don't know who or how, but something's going to go wrong this week. And it just felt like the calm before the storm. And then sure enough, get the call on Christmas Eve and the whole thing blew up, but we managed to fix it. So leave some buffer in your closing dates because something always happens.
Always happens. So we got it done. Felt amazing to get it done and collapsed for a couple of days. Mike, you had I'd love to hear from you. Like you wrote a great investor update just this week, kind of summarizing how things are going, what you've been up to. Yeah. Can you tell kind of people post-close, what have you been up to? Like, what have you been doing? How does the business look? Plans going forward? Kind of like the report from the ground would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, we actually started doing a bunch pre-close because we weren't expecting the deal to almost blow up, right? So we had, we knew we had time before closing to start working on the business. And I felt like the risk of not closing was relatively small at that point. And the amount we were going to spend doing this pre-work was, you know, $5,000-$7,000 and you know, just some employee costs and shipping costs to get some samples done. We have our team in the Philippines. And so we started taking new photography and making some new infographics for Amazon. The old business was on another shopping platform. And so we started building a brand new Shopify store and getting all this stuff done. So we had a bunch of things that we had already in the pipeline. And then it came time for closing. You know, first things first was all the stuff that you don't want to do, right? The things that are no fun as a business owner, getting all the credit cards in the right spot, updating the business name, updating the EIN number, calling all the vendors and letting them know that you've bought the business and that you're very excited to work with them, getting new employee offer letters in people's hands, credit card processing, shipping. I mean, just, you know, on and on and on. There's just a ton of stuff. You have a feeling that you're just basically being hit by a fire hose trying to deal with all this. And as you switch stuff, other things break that you weren't anticipating. And so I'm very happy and thankful that we made the decision to drive across the country to deal with this, because I don't care what anybody says, like, you know, you can get things done in a remote world. And we've been working that way for the better part of a year now, but there's just some things that can't get done remotely, you know, not as efficiently at least. And being there in person was just kind of a godsend. And so to a point where we've now delayed our return trip back home by another couple of weeks. Right now we're just visiting some family in between, and we're going to go back and spend another couple of weeks there just because nothing replaces in-person time. And so the second part of this, we're hoping to get some more of the fun things done, talk about future opportunities and, you know, ways that we can potentially improve the business in other ways. But to begin with, it's all that stuff you just never think about. You know, if you think about your own business, anyone who's listening, you know, you probably don't think that what you do day to day is all that important or doesn't really take up that much time, or you haven't really learned that much. Just think about like how you would explain to someone who's never been in your business how to do your business, and you'll realize like how complex it is, like how many moving parts there are. And every business, no matter how alike it is, it's still e-commerce, it's still so different. And so it's been a bunch of those types of things the, you know, last couple of weeks.
Yeah, Mike, I was so glad you were able to go out there to hop in the van and drive out, which, you know, not everybody could do. Because when you buy a business, you know, this is a major life change for the people that work at that business, obviously for the seller, but also for your new employees. So, you know, the fact that you were able to be there, look each of them in the eye, say it's going to be okay, you know, offer, I think we offered some of them raises in some cases, you know, just to kind of say it's going to be all right. There's no substitute for in-person.
Yeah. That was really the thing that pushed me over the edge, you know, as I was talking to your now manager of the business that was, you know, had transferred with the business and just telling her about all the things we wanted to do with the business and how excited we were to have her. And I'm like having these meetings over Zoom at like a scheduled time, you know, it felt like kind of like up in the air, that movie of George Clooney, like just very impersonal. And we weren't obviously letting anybody go. There weren't bad conversations, but you know, it went against my whole life mantra of treat others like you like to be treated. And I started thinking about like, if this was me, how would I feel right now? Like somebody 2,500 miles away is telling me this stuff over Zoom, and do I really trust them? And you know, you just don't get a feel for somebody in the same way. And so once I started realizing that, over above all the other things that, you know, there are other reasons I was happy that I was there, that had to be the number one thing. I was, like you just said, Bill, I mean, I was happy to be able to go there, shake their hand or give them elbow bumps in this world, you know, give them their offer letters, explain to them that, you know, we're good people. We gave all of them a raise of some sort, either just, you know, by dollar amount or some sort of benefits increase or just something. We just wanted to make it so it was exciting for them as well in some ways. And so, you know, we have four people now that seem to be pretty happy with the way things have gone versus, you know, being skittish, right? I mean, you know, they're all going to be like, what's going to happen to my job? And we wanted to try to get those thoughts out of their head.
Yeah. It's amazed me, Mike, how much you've gotten done too, from obviously a lot of prep work and groundwork went into laying the groundwork for that happened. But yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think I was just checking out the website one day for some reason, and I pulled it up and it got redirected to the new domain that we picked and a new design. And I was like, whoa, this is like, we closed like a week ago. This thing's live. It's crazy. So yeah, amazing, great work. And thank you for everything you've done leading up to and past close. And then, I mean, as long as we're sharing funny stories and anecdotes, you want to talk about what happened with Amazon and how you tried to scare the heck out of me?
I guess it's funny now, but so Andrew and I have like this constant prank war going on, and Andrew's up like 6-0 on me, and so he knows that I'm going to get him back one day, like really, really badly. And here's what's funny: like I was going to text Andrew and tell him that our Amazon account got suspended, and he's going to see right through this. So this isn't a good way to get back at him. And then like sure as can be, our Amazon account gets suspended, like for real. Like this was not a prank, and you know, it was basically a fraud check, which this is just typical Amazon crap. Like I had emailed Amazon three times, told them we were going to be updating various information on our account and to please flag our account so the account wouldn't get suspended. And as sure as can be, like when we go to do it, they suspend our account and they send us an email like your account's been suspended and all your listings have been delisted, your orders have been refunded, like the whole like the nightmare email. And so I text Andrew. I was like, do you want the good news or the bad news? I think you said you wanted the bad news first. And so I was like, well, our account's been suspended. You're like, nice try, man. I'm like, what if I send you a screenshot of the email? You're like, nope, that you have Photoshop. And then I was like, no, seriously, this actually really did happen.
I think if the business actually did fall apart, it would have taken me 2 weeks to believe you.
Right, so. Right. Yeah, you know, it was, I knew that you were going to, that was what was, that so it was just like, it was actually super comical. Like you would have to be really on the inside, like, and understand like all the dynamics between us to fully understand like how funny this really was, because I had literally thought of doing this and I was like, he's going to see right through it. And so as soon as it actually really did happen, you were like, nope, I don't believe it. I'm like, oh yeah. And so, I mean, luckily we got the thing by that time. I think we had already gotten it fixed. I mean, luckily this was like only a few hour situation. And so, you know, the only thing that really happened after that was like for the next 3 days, I was like holding my breath, like making sure that nothing else happened. Cause we've had an issue like this happen with us where a few days later, we just started noticing a decline in sales. Like all of our rankings started going away. I was like, what, you know, and it took us a while to recover from that. And so luckily that didn't happen here, but yeah, it was a pretty intense moment. Definitely had a lump in my throat for sure.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, couldn't think of two better guys to be in business with or two better people in general. And really appreciate everything, Mike, you've done and Bill, that you've done to kind of get us through the whole process. And also all the ECF Capital investors that stuck with us, especially on the kind of the final push there. So yeah, I'm excited to see how this goes. And thank you for everything you guys have done. Any final thoughts here as we kind of put a bow on this?
No, I'm excited to be in business with you guys, excited to be in business with ECF Capital. You know, it's nice that, you know, we got ECF Capital off the ground. The first deal is done. So I'm looking forward to doing a lot more. So if you are listening and you would like Andrew and myself and Mike and all the other ECF Capital investors to be on your cap table, if you're thinking about raising money or taking some money off the table, please call us. Call Andrew. Don't call me. Call Andrew. call Andrew and he will give you more information.
Yeah. You can learn more if you just want to reach out. ecommercefuel.com/capital is the best way to get in touch. And yeah, thanks for the pitch, Bill. I probably should have done that as well. So Mike, any final thoughts at all on the dealer transaction or anything?
Well, I've been trying to figure out a way to get back on the E-Commerce Fuel podcast. This was a lot of work, but
pretty expensive ticket.
Yeah, it was a pretty expensive ticket, but thanks for getting me back on.
Anytime, man. Anytime we do a deal together, open invite. So.
I think we should do a recap in like 6 or 12 months and let everybody know how things are going. But as of right now, super excited. I mean, you know, I've been on, you know, through lots of business deals, and things don't always work out the way that you hope. And so I'm cautiously optimistic, but I feel like, you know, the odds are in our favor here, and definitely excited to work with an amazing team. And I think that you create your own luck by working hard. And so we're going to work hard as we can and hopefully have a cool story to tell.
Agreed. We'll definitely have to do a recap in the coming year or so. So, well, gentlemen, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming on to talk about this. It's been a great experience doing this so far, and looking forward to hopefully a very profitable next couple of years. That's going to do it for this week. Again, a big thank you to the team at Klaviyo for making the show possible. The best place to send highly segmented messages via email and SMS to your customers to make more money. You can learn more about them and get started at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also brought to you by the E-Commerce Fuel Private Community, a vetted forum and review directory of 1,000+ in the trenches experienced store owners that you can connect with to help grow your business. If you want to learn more about that and apply for membership, you can do that at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard and adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
The ASY Radio Network, live from New York.